end it after the shove it, or will it? Miami running around, circling. Oh, look out! Gronkowski didn't have the angle! Touchdown! Oh, Kenyon Drake! A miracle!
Hello, welcome to the Dolphin UK podcast. Another week, lads, and to be fair, we were expecting it, but that was a pretty humbling defeat. But it is London week, so a bit of disappointment, a bit of excitement, all more mixed together for today's episode. Si, how are you, mate?
Yeah, all good, thanks, Andy. You're right, it's a bit of a mixed bag today. I think the sooner we move on from Tampa Bay, the better, but let's look forward to the Jags game this coming weekend. That's what we should focus on more. I think the positives, because there are plenty of other things to talk about if we wanted.
Hear, hear. Lee, has it been going with your brother? Like, has he been kind of rubbing you up the wrong way about this? What's been happening?
No, not really. To be honest, I said to him beforehand, like, if you don't go out and beat a backup quarterback there in a team that's playing this bad by 20 or 30, like, you should probably be more worried than I am. Like, this isn't the matchup that we would hope it would be before the season. So I'm just glad I didn't play £300 a ticket to get there. Tickets in the back of the upper bowl there, we're going for like $300 each before the season started. So I mean, small grace.
And you were thinking of doing the previous Sunday, weren't you? And then staying around for this week. Wasn't that the case? You were doing two in one?
No. Just doing this one. We were going to go for 3 days. We were going to fly Saturday and fly back Monday.
Definitely wouldn't have been worth it for you. Well, yeah. So, I mean, let's dive in. Let's break things down. There's a couple of good things, I guess, and a lot of bad things, but we'll move quickly through it. 45-17. For three quarters, it wasn't too bad. I don't know. I don't know if you want to disagree with that, guys, but for three quarters, I didn't think it was too bad. And then suddenly the floodgates opened and it all kind of went down the proverbial. So not great. Brady, 411 yards, 5 touchdowns, completely tore apart the secondary. Antonio Brown had a huge game, which was a bit of a surprise. I think Mike Evans had another good game as well. When we were on offense, it wasn't inspiring. But again, for a bit, it was okay, wasn't it? I mean, Myles Gaskin was our lead receiver, 10 receptions, 74 yards and 2 touchdowns. But there is a positive that the offensive line looked better, I think. Do we want to start there? Si, happy with that kind of assertion that the offensive line looked better?
Yeah, I guess it did, because in the first quarter, when things were going reasonably okay on offense, there weren't any major concerns, I didn't feel, at that stage. And they were moving the ball, they were spreading it around the field, they were scoring points. So from that perspective, I didn't feel as though there was a massive concern, and it looked like the positional changes that they'd done on that line were working. But as you say, it then all started to unravel. I mean, we got signs of it in the second quarter when the Patriots got 17 unanswered points. So you thought, oh, here we go. And then the Dolphins got a touchdown in the third, which brought it back to within 7. And you thought, okay, they're showing a little bit of fight and things weren't getting too much out of hand. So again, the offensive line weren't collapsing totally. But as you say, it then all unraveled in the fourth with 21 unanswered points. And I don't think you can put it solely down to the offensive line. I think you've got to look at the defensive performance more so, I feel, this week than the O-line. But little bit of progress made on the O-line, but clearly there's a lot of work still to be done.
I enjoyed the fact that you said the Patriots, because you just can't disassociate Tom Brady with that.
Yeah, I did. I did it, and I did it last week as well, didn't I?
So exactly. That's fine, mate.
It's just Brady and Patriots are ingrained in my mind, I think, with 20-odd years of torture, I think. So
No problem at all, mate. All good. Lee, your thoughts, mate? I mean, I thought, well, we know that Austin Jackson had his best game of the year in terms of, you know, all the PFF grades and stuff, and left guard seemed to sit a bit better with him. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I thought he definitely played better. I'm still worried long term, because I think I don't know if long term we've made a great change by fixing the left-hand side of this line just to put just to put the left-handed quarterback back in. You know, he got killed from the right, and all of a sudden we can't protect from the right again. I don't know. I'd be honest, I much prefer Eichenberg over there solely because it's effectively our left tackle with Tua, and that's the goal. Like, if Tua walks out on the field and gets killed on Sunday, like with yet again Jesse Davis standing over the freshly killed body of a quarterback, like, I think you've got to ask bigger questions. Yes, you fix part of the O-line, but it's absolutely no good if, you know, I end up playing quarterback. What's the point? Like, but yeah, there was definitely improvement. I think it shows that Austin Jackson has some life. Like, there's still something to work with, maybe. Like, this is salvageable. I think he surprised a lot of people. A lot of people thought that moving inside, things would be moving quicker and he would struggle more. I mean, there was obviously the one play he struggled with, him and Eichenberg struggled on the same play. But, you know, like, it's not going to be perfect. We're not working on getting to perfection here. We're working on becoming adequate. So, yeah, I thought there was good progress. And I'll be honest, I thought the offense actually played really well until Jacoby Brissett got hurt. And I applaud him for playing through that. With the way this team's been playing and the way things looked like they were going, I wouldn't have blamed him if he just said, "I'm done, like, leave me on this cart. Like, I'm cool for the rest of the day."
Yeah, exactly. Sorry you were coming in. Sorry, mate.
Yeah, I just want to go on talk about the offensive line and where we sit for the rest of the season. I don't think there's any way that they are going to reach that adequate level, Lee, for the rest of the season that you're aiming for. I think it's, if they're going to salvage this offensive line, they're going to have to do it in the off-season. I don't think that they're playing at a level now where things are looking as though they're going to improve to such a level that they're going to be competitive. I think this is something they're going to have to manage for the rest of the season, for good or for better or for worse. But I think there must surely be a real rebuilding job in the off-season. And that's a conversation for another day, of course. But I don't feel as though constant rotation, is it doing them any good? They've got to find some level of consistency, I guess, now. They've said that the combination they've got currently is kind of going to what they use going forward, but they're playing at such a level, they're always going to have these sorts of problems, I think. I don't think it's anything that we're going to see a drastic change of for the rest of the year.
Almost. Like when I was saying before the draft, we should have taken a tackle at 6 and a tackle at 18 or wherever we were. People were like, "You're absolutely mad. You can't keep drafting tackles."
I completely get it. And I actually said after we drafted two of the year before, I would spend all the next year's picks on O-line until we get it right, because it's been such a disaster for such a long time. But I do think through three quarters of this game, this line I thought was adequate against one of the best defensive fronts in the NFL. And we don't see too many more of those defensive fronts coming up. I think they have a chance to get in a rhythm and become adequate. Yeah, there probably needs to be a rebuild. But if you do a rebuild, we end up back where we are now with people moving around and then cross-training and doing all the same nonsense that we're unhappy with now. So I don't know what the real answer is. But I thought things started to turn to look bad for the Dolphins when Jacoby became less mobile. And yeah, the longer it went on, the worse it came. I say, you completely applaud him for actually staying in the game. And you could see he was talking to Flores. Flores said, like, he wanted to stay in there. So, great.
Yep.
But, yeah, for me, that's when it started to go downhill. Because I actually thought the offense was basically doing what we wanted. Still missing throws. I mean, Jacoby, I still thought he was playing like a backup, just better than the weeks before. If he plays like that the 2 weeks before, I think we win both those games. You know, if the offense is called that way,
if the offense is called that way, I agree. Yeah, definitely. I think I don't know whether we'd have won, but we'd have looked better anyway. It was refreshing to see Preston Williams kind of coming out there, making a couple of big grabs, but then we just turned away from him again, didn't we? And then it became, obviously, the mobility thing was there, but you can't come out of these games with Miles Gaskin as your lead receiver. A couple of, you know, solid touchdowns for him, fair play, did well, got out the backfield and did his job, but I just, you know, against this Bucks secondary, they didn't have Antoine Winfield. You've got the aging Richard Sherman playing his second game after kind of a turbulent offseason. Just, I just wanted to see again a bit more consistency of down the field. But yeah, we'll come to that. Go on, sorry.
You mentioned about Gaskin having 10 catches. Looking at the stats, wide receivers accounted for 7 catches all game. And that's another reason that that isn't level of play is not sustainable.
Yeah.
I do think there was still plenty of missed stuff still. I still think Jacoby's playing like a backup, like better. And I thought the game was called better, especially suited his skill set. Like on the Miles Gaskin touchdown, they had to let pressure up towards Jacoby Brissett, because that's the way Gaskin got open. Like that's not an O-line problem. That's it's designed that way. So I got no problem with that. I thought it was much improved, but
yeah. I mean, just beating by a better team on the day, isn't it really? I mean, we can dive into as much analysis of that as we want, but they are just a better team. Yeah.
For all the people that were stressing about the way we got beat, we expected to get beat. Before the season, when we expected this team to be good, people assumed it'd get beat in this game. I don't understand why there was such a terrible shock. You're in this game with a quarter to go. If I'd said that to you last week, you'd say, yeah, I'll take it. So, like, I think it's... You're almost your own worst enemy by playing well in the first half. It's like, oh, hang on, maybe there is a chance. And even the most pessimistic fan still has the fan in them that says, all right, well, maybe. Do you know what I mean? It's... When you see it on the field and they go and score a touchdown and they make another long drive, it's like, all right, maybe we've turned a corner here. I said it before the game last week. I don't really care about the result. We knew we were going to go into it. I said I wanted to see the offense perform better. I thought it did what I wanted. I think the missing part is we will see I would hope we see an uplift when we put a starting quarterback back in.
Interesting with regards to the defense. You had that collapse in the fourth, and don't forget, you are playing against Tom Brady in the number one offense in the league, so that it does have to be put into perspective a little bit in terms of how they played. You need to give them credit as well, because they can, Tom Brady especially, as you know, he can adjust to what he's seeing on the field and play accordingly, and he's obviously the best quarterback of all time. So you've got to put the overall result into a little bit of perspective. And like you say, Andy, you've got to acknowledge that they were defeated by a better team. One thing I did find interesting, don't forget also, you had Howard and Jones, who had injuries in the week leading up to the game, so they may not have been 100%, albeit they weren't on the final injury report. And also, I don't know whether anyone else has picked up on this, but you had Javon Holland and Brandon Jones, who took the most of the snaps at safety over McCourty and Rowe. And if you put them in front of somebody like Tom Brady, he's gonna tear them to shreds on his day, isn't he? So, I mean, at the end of the day, it'll be good experience for them, of course, to get the snaps against somebody like Tom Brady. But they've got... only a season or two, or even less in Holland's case, between them in terms of experience. So, of course, Brady's going to get the better of them.
There was also there was also some good play as well. Like the Mike Evans touchdown over Byron Jones, right? It was great coverage. It was just a perfect throw and a good catch. Like, good offense beat good defense on the play. It was no more than that. But, of course, it gets chalked up as a touchdown. And it's kind of on the... is there as part of the sort of falling apart there in the fourth quarter. But really, it was just a good play. You know, like you say, the two corners are playing banged up as well. I thought Raekwon Davis, I haven't seen the snap counts, but I would imagine looking at it that they were very heavily weighted in favour of him playing more in the first half than the second.
I haven't seen it, mate. I think Sy's got it up, but I don't think that the stat sheet we've got breaks it down into time of game. So
no, I was seeing him less and less. Although I thought when he started the game, he looked good. You could see a noticeable difference from the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, and we limited the run game. I think Fournette was under 50 yards, and he was the lead rusher for the Bucks. So, but they didn't need to use the run game, did they? In the end, I mean, Brown and Evans just went off and had a huge day. So. But one quick positive I want to talk about actually is Jalen Phillips. Obviously got his first sack ever against in the league against a quarterback of Brady's stature. You know, and another good game and some promising signs there. We had a lot of talk in the commentary. I think it was Tony Romo like being very complimentary of Phillips and stuff. So that's good to see. And that, if that development continues, then you know, a real kind of 1-2 punch with Ogbon on the other side. So, yeah, Si, any kind of takeaway there, or just solid, really?
He's getting his name called in the commentary a lot more now than he was earlier in the season, and that's a really good sign for the impact that he's making. And it seems to be improving on a game-by-game basis, which is exactly what you'd want to see. And he's going to be able to tell something when he's older and he's got kids that he sacked Tom Brady. So he's actually trending in the right direction, of course, and that's very promising from him.
Yeah, I think he's just got better each week, and over the last 3 weeks especially, just improvement. And he's also getting close a lot of pressure. You know, you could see that when everything settles down, maybe even later in the season, but especially the start of next season, when things are moving a bit slower for him, that he'll be getting a lot more of these sacks because he's that much quicker off the ball. But, you know, for all the negatives, there's the first-round pick that looks like he's panning out. Okay, Jalen Waddle had the bad drop, but also played pretty well in the game. Like, there's going to be mistakes as well. I'm not going to crucify him for the mistakes, but, you know, those picks both look okay right now.
Just not...
They can't play tackle, though.
Exactly. That was the point. It was coming. First time I've really seen a lot of Dolphins Twitter kind of saying that they've had enough of Brian Flores and the rest of the gang there. I won't spend too long on it. I think I can guess what you're both going to say. But Lee, back to you. Are you kind of in that headspace at all? 1-4 start to the season, get rid of the coaching staff?
No, not really. I think easily before the season, if we'd said through the first five games they'd gone 2-3, it wouldn't have been out of the question. So yes, the performances have been bad, but I still want to. Every time I see something on Twitter, and I don't jump in on Twitter because I try to stay more level-headed than that, is we're playing with a backup quarterback. People forget that. Yes, Nick Foles was a backup and took a team to a Super Bowl, but that doesn't usually happen. Usually, it's bad. And we've seen bad. Like, we can look back and say the Patriots game wasn't good, but it doesn't matter because you won. And that's all that does matter. So, you know, I really think this team is... I think this weekend is such a massive watershed, but we'll get on to that in a minute. Let Simon buzz his thoughts on the coaching staff and front office.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen it said on Twitter that the whole lot of them need to be sacked or fired. And for Greer, now is not the time. Firing Greer now will have no impact on the on-field product whatsoever. It won't mask the coaching shenanigans that's going on in terms of lack of coaching, if you like. It won't mask the play calling that's going on. So firing Greer mid-season will have no impact whatsoever. So that's not clearly not going to happen. I wouldn't have thought Flores, still a little bit too early in terms of his tenure, I think. And I think the thing that's working in his favour is that they are supposedly in the midst of a rebuild, and they've got to, as we've talked many times in the past on this podcast, it's part of a plan and you've got to see the plan through to the end. It's not comparable to Joe Philbin, where he didn't have the benefit of any luxury benefit of any draft picks or free agent cash. That's the difference between the two scenarios, I feel. Even though Ross, as I said last week, has set a precedent for firing a coach with less defeats than Flores has got now. So again, I don't think Flores will get fired unless things get even worse and they keep on that losing streak and there's no sign of it turning around. So, but that's not imminent. So I don't think that's the answer. And it's difficult to know what is the answer mid-season. So I don't think we'll find out. Nothing will change. It wouldn't surprise me during the season. If anything's going to happen, I would imagine it would be the end of the season.
Yeah. And I think that the points that are being... Well, there's loads of variety of points being made on this. I think Friend of the show, Raj, was kind of saying the hiring of like offensive coordinators has been consistently poor. There's a lack of development of playing staff. Obviously, with Iguanagani and Jackson, the kind of case in point there. Even Christian Wilkins to a certain extent. And then you've got, I think it was Peter Combs, sorry if I got that wrong, saying that it just looks like the players have quit on the team. So kind of a few perspectives there. I completely agree with Raj on the offensive coordinator thing. I think that's the thing that will, if you know, this season turns out to be the last season that Flores has here, that'll be the defining feature. I don't think it should be, and I don't think it will be, but the lack of experience, play calling. And I understand why, like, you don't want to be overshadowed by someone like a Doug Peterson or Anthony Lynn or whoever coming in the off-season. And they want to get everyone in place for Tua, people that have worked with Tua before. Fine, all well and good. But it's just not looking like solid man management at this point, is it? It's just looking, and especially when they've gone so off the beaten path and gone for dual offensive coordinators and a quarterback coach who could be calling the players, we're not entirely sure. So those, you know, there's three minds working on it. It's just, you know, you put three minds of different opinion on things in any work of life, and it's not going to come out with a, not like a clear, tangible solution. So it feels like a bit of a, that's a poor error of judgment from him. Go on, Si.
If you think about the history with his offensive coordinators, he's not had one longer than a year. And if this pattern continues, and they do make another change at the end of this season, who's going to want to take the job? Because you look at the history, they're going to look at that and say, well, I mean, they only last a year and they move on. Why would I want to put my family, move, uproot my family, make all those changes to simply last a year? So it's looking as though that particular role is not an attractive role to want to be in at the moment. So it's not, he's going to find him, if he's not careful, get caught between a rock and a hard place with regard to the future of that role.
Yeah, go on, Luke.
I think when it comes to offensive coordinator, I think what they really want is they want to get to the stage where Tua is calling most of the plays. That's what it, to me, boils down to. They want Tom Brady. Like, that's what Flores has come from, where the quarterback is having as much input into what is going on as anybody else. Where he... Like, who's better to tell you what he thinks should be run than the guy actually performing it? Because if he doesn't believe in the call, surely that is a terrible place to be starting before you even go to the line of scrimmage. Yeah. So I think that's kind of the ultimate goal. But of course, like you say, they're gearing everything towards Tua. Well, that's fine. But now we're basing on a conversation on possibly sacking the guy based on three games without him. Like, you can't. Yeah. I just don't. I find that really, really quite baffling. The other thing I don't like right now, which I think is media driven for me, is all the talk of, well, Brian Flores wanted Justin Herbert. Well, if you believe Brian Flores or Chris Greer or Stephen Ross, pick whichever one you want. When they hired Flores, they were all in lockstep. And we knew before that Tua was the guy they wanted. So he was either on board with it, or that has been a lie from the very beginning. And they're not even close to being in lockstep. But we all believe they were in lockstep when they won 10 games last year, because they won 10 games.
It's a completely pointless conversation, isn't it? The Tua one. It's just completely irrelevant. I mean, I've seen other Dolphins pundits doing it today and doing a redraft. It's just, what are you bothering for? It didn't happen, so let's just move on with it.
To be fair, I'm at it, so. It's what now, 8 o'clock on a Tuesday. I can't believe we haven't seen this week's Deshaun Watson story yet. It's just the same one reprinted. Like,
I did see it yesterday, actually.
That
Dan Celio Salio, somehow he's got a blue tick on Twitter. Every Monday he's around with it.
That's
but that comes from the other Dolphins pundits who, I think you two in the group chat with them, I'm not going to name it, but it's just constant stream of misinformation from there. And yeah, anyway, that's my current grievance. But go on, Si.
The other grievance I have is that, and nothing against Alan Fitz, but he raised this on Twitter earlier today, and he said, why do we always keep getting linked to all of the players like Herberts and the Watsons and the and like that that go on to do really well with teams. And he was making that observation, and I replied back to him and said, it's pointless. It making those observations achieves nothing. Why even bother with those? Because they don't mean anything. It is what it is. We didn't pick them. Let's concentrate on the players that we did select, because to speculate what might have happened otherwise is just a pointless activity.
And I also remember we do get linked to people that don't turn out very good, so I just don't talk about them because they're not very good. Like, I remember Dwayne Haskins was sat there and everyone was going, let's draft Dwayne Haskins, be great. Geezer's a bum. Not seen a single mention of him being linked to Miami since. And there's that point as well, isn't there? So obviously Justin Herbert's a very good quarterback. He doesn't play for Miami. Why are we still having the conversation?
Exactly. In a completely different situation. It's not a direct comparison. You can't say, pick him up out of here, stick him in the Dolphins team. Oh, everything would have been great. That's just not... That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Two things I want to say. First of all, I'm not having a go at you, Alan Fitz, if you're listening. I was just making the using your tweet as an example in terms of what people are thinking in general. So you're a good guy, Alan. The other point I was going to make as well is the person who I'm feeling sorry for the most in all of this is Tua, because he's still taking a lot of flack and he's not even losing the games at the moment. And he's set himself up to be a hero in terms of rescuing this season. But if it doesn't work out, I feel as though he's still going to be made the scapegoat. He's still going to get his body on the line because of the quality of the offensive line, and I fear he's not going to get a good enough chance to prove himself that he is a good quarterback this season because of that offensive line, and he's the one that I feel sorry for at the moment.
I completely agree with you that, you know, this is set up for him to come back and possibly do well. And, you know, you go out there and win a few games coming up and go, oh, it's all right, we knew he's going to be good all along, don't worry. I mean, let's be honest, compared to some of the national writers out there, we could all do the same thing as well. Should we write a story about how people let Russell Wilson drop so far each week? And what about all the teams that passed on Tom Brady more than once? Do you know what I mean? Should we, you know, it's just such a ridiculous game to play. But everything is set up for him to come back. The slate of games coming up is set up for him to do okay. Like, there is a chance that this season can be saved. Like, it's not beyond the realms of possibility, and it starts this week, because this is an opponent that you could get stuff going against. If you come out of this game with a big win, things are looking very different.
Although I did note that we've still got the third most difficult strength of schedule for the rest of the way. So it will be a challenge, obviously. But
he's got to win games at some point. Like you say, you don't want him only winning easy games, but there is a part of the schedule here where you can get, okay, I know we've got the Bills in like 3 weeks' time, right? Okay, let's chalk that up as a loss already, fine. But we've got the Jags, the Falcons, the Jets. Do you know what I mean? Like, yes, the Jets have played well. They've also played horrible. Like, those are teams that you can go out there and win. I think the defense, if you can get on a roll, if you can break this bad cycle that you're in right now, all of a sudden things can just look so much better. It's not the end of the world. Like, yeah, I don't know. I don't want to rant too much. Just...
have the faith. That's what you're saying, Lee. That's what you're saying.
At this stage, what have you got to lose by having the faith?
Well, fingers crossed it all goes well at the weekend. If we're sat here next week and we're 1-5 and we've not scored a point again in London like last time, then we'll renew that faith slightly again. Go on, Si.
Just be thankful we don't have Urban Meyer as head coach at the moment, because that he and his that organisation are just a bit of a shambles at the moment. So be thankful we don't have him to deal with every week.
But if you believe social media, we are the worst franchise in the history of franchises of everything ever. Like, it, you know, John Gruden's just doing his best to outdo everybody. Do you know what I mean? Urban Meyer is making a clown of himself. Like, you know. There is other teams that are actually in probably worse positions than we are, but
yeah, you know. For anyone who's thinking of changing head coaches, there's absolutely no way on earth Brian Flores is going to be anything like John Gruden and Urban Meyer. So be thankful for what you've got.
You know, it's, and I think you can't you know, it's, everyone's always really happy to pull the trigger and fire someone. Just see what you get in instead. Like, we've been that team. We've done that. Like, and the last comparison I want to make, if we want to compare Tua to Justin Herbert all the time, why don't we also compare it to the first season's worth of games that Josh Allen played? When everyone else is pointing and saying, oh, look, that's still the inaccurate quarterback, the big-armed quarterback that came out of college. No one's laughing at that now. You know, you've got to stick with the program somewhat. And the problem is Brian Flores has done this and preached his message. And when it gets through, the team has turned. It happened in the first season. When his message got through and he had the team playing the way he wanted to, all of a sudden they win five games when no one thought they'd win any games.
Final point on that, actually, and related to Flores' management is, so I saw someone make an interesting point that he's kind of removed that veteran leadership from the dressing room and we seem to be bumbling along as we are. Is there anything there? Because that obviously a lot of this stuff just is like, you know, it doesn't bother me whatsoever and I don't agree with a lot of it, but that is, I think that's actually a very good point because other than maybe, I don't know, Devin McCourty, Jason, I can't remember which one we've got. Which one have we got?
Jason,
sorry. Other than Jason McCourty, I can't think of somebody in that locker room who has been in the league for a long time, who is the kind of, you know, who's going to say the things that the coaching staff won't say to fellow players and just rattle some cages a bit. And that, I think that's me thinking in an English football sense, because for me, I always want someone in the locker room, that centre-back that's willing to go around and knock heads together. Don't know whether you think anything about that.
I think for me, if Brian Flores was... I think the problem is that statement almost pushes him into the Joe Philbin, I can't deal with players that are like that sort of, to use an Omar Kelly term, those alpha players. Do you know what I mean? But I think if that's the case, I don't think you bow to the Xavier Howard pressure earlier in the season, because Brian Flores did seem genuinely happy to get that done. I think the reason you have to remove some of the veteran talent on offense is you're trying to make it the quarterback's team. If they don't and the quarterback sinks, we say it's because he's getting undermined by people who have seen better. But you can't do that if you sort of eliminate. I think you have to look at the team as two separate entities, do you know what I mean? Rather than just as a whole. And I think on defense, like you say, I think they might not be visibly leaders out on the field, but I would hope for the money you paid them, some of these guys are leaders somewhere, like a Byron Jones or an Xavier Howard or an Emmanuel Ogba, do you know what I mean? Or Jerome Baker, like, I think there's also, if you bought Jerome Baker as a free agent, we'd expect him to be a leader. But because he grew up in the system, it's almost like, he's Jerome Baker. He's the same guy we drafted. I don't know. I think there should be some presence there. I don't know. But I don't know if it's because Flores can't deal with it. But it's certainly an interesting point.
It's difficult to have too many of those veteran leaders because they've got one of the youngest rosters in the NFL still, of course, haven't they? So by nature and by definition, you're clearly going to have less veteran presence in that locker room because of that average age. So clearly you're going to have one or two, of course, but you're looking at the likes of Jacoby Brissett, who's probably one of the most experienced players on that roster, and he's in theory only a backup. So it's difficult to have him as a... Could you? Well, he would play the Fitz role, wouldn't he? Effectively, that was there last year. But who else?
But the problem is, I don't think you can have someone play the Fitz role, because if someone is Fitz, then he needs to be starting, which is why Fitz is no longer here, because he's too big a presence. And not, you know, I know that sounds like it's a negative, but it's not. Why he was here and why he's playing, it's the greatest thing ever. But it's also the same reason he's no longer here.
Yeah, I meant in terms of being a mentor and being a leader in the locker room and giving advice and opinions as opposed to being a leader on the field. There is a difference there. That's kind of the point I was trying to allude to there.
Yeah. Interesting one to discuss, though. I think there might be something there, but we'll have to wait and see. Quick game balls, and then we're going to have to move on. Quick game balls. Si, want to hand one out this week, or
I will actually. Andy, thanks. Gaskin for his two touchdowns. So he gets my game ball, and he was caught a career high 10 passes for 74 yards. He deserves it this week for me.
Me,
Jacoby Brissett. I think he played much better. He tried to push the ball, whether it was called that way or not. It obviously happened, so that's a good thing. And also, I thought he played through a tough injury on what already looked like it was going to be a tough day. And you know, I know NFL players are tough, but also he got carted off. Like, if we hadn't seen him again, I don't think any of us would have been surprised or blamed him. So, you know, I think for gutting it out and doing the best he could, he deserves something. And also Jaden Phillips. Jaden Phillips is going to keep getting him every time he steps up his game like this each week, because I think it's... 3 weeks ago, I gave him crap on here because he hadn't played well. And now he's just played well every week. So, great. Like, happy to be wrong.
But yeah, he heard you, Lee, clearly.
Obviously listens to the podcast, but...
Your bulletin board material, he's probably got a picture of you in his locker, I think.
That's the case. I was going to go with Phillips. I hope he actually got a physical game ball as well, the one that Brady was holding when he was sacked by him. So that'd be nice.
I can't imagine Flores was giving out any game balls.
Yeah, very true. But smuggled that in with the equipment staff. Quickly before we go on to the Jags game, seeing Jason talking about today, seeing, I think it's Ali, the Dole Freaky on Twitter, saying that the atmosphere in Hard Rock Stadium is poor. Saw another report saying that it was actually the worst. This was, I assume, was linked to what those guys were saying, but an actual physical report which has been looked into all 32 teams, and the atmosphere in Hard Rock Stadium when the Dolphins are home is the worst in the league. You guys have been more than me. Thoughts on that? From my couple of experiences, I find it hard to disagree. I've been to Patriots, Buccaneers, Giants. All of them, for me, have had a bit more of a atmosphere than the Dolphins. But your thoughts on that, Si?
I think it's really hard as a fan to understand why you can't take a big sign into the stadium anymore, because that's half the fun. Why? What harm does it do? Why take that away from fans? Also, persistent standing in the deep end has been clamped down on. Shout, cheering and chanting has been clamped down on. Why? Because it just ruins that fan experience, and I can't understand the logic behind that. Because you want your fans to enjoy themselves, because if they do that, they're going to get behind the team, and getting behind the team is going to impact the way they respond on the field, you feel. So I really can't understand why they felt the need to do that, unless it's somehow related to COVID, or I don't know. I don't know how it can be now. So it's difficult to comprehend the logic behind those sorts of calls. And I can only sympathise with Ali for having that experience. I've not seen it myself, of course, in Hard Rock, so it's difficult to comprehend firsthand what it feels like. But for us, we're used to it because we don't take signs into soccer stadiums, do we? Holding up Tom Brady sucks on a big bit of card. It's just not.
But you'd get beaten up for that here. That's the difference, yeah. by your own fans.
Yeah, I mean we just don't see that in English sport very much. You have your flags and stuff, but for those placards, it doesn't happen here. So I can understand their frustration and put that alongside the fact that they are doing a lot with regards to getting the tennis at Hard Rock and the new Formula One circuit that's being built. And it's all about generating revenue for the sports complex that is now Hard Rock Stadium. And so I think they feel as though putting all that effort and money being generated into that, whilst at the same time taking away that fan experience, and at the same time throwing the mix of a poor product on the field, I can understand the frustrations and where they're coming from.
Yeah, that was it. I think I read that the Dolphins haven't sold out a home game for something like 14 years, which is absolutely wild. And that's incredible, really, isn't it? Like, that's an indictment of the franchise as a whole rather than the fan experience, but obviously it all plays into one thing.
I do think there has to be some context though as well with Miami. Like, for anyone out there who's a basketball fan, like when the Heat had the big three and they went to consecutive, four consecutive championships. They couldn't get people in the building to start the games then with the best players in the world winning games. Miami is a different, it's such a different place and a different culture. There's other stuff to do. I can spend a day out on the boat. Do you know what I mean? And then head over to the game if I want. If the Dolphins are bad, why would I even bother? You know, if I'm there all the time, I can watch it on a boat whilst fishing. Maybe I'm doing that instead. Like, do I want the hassle of getting to the ground and getting in the ground? I'd imagine, trying to play devil's advocate a little bit, some of the reason they're clamping down on chanting is because the ground's usually full of away fans. And it's actually helping your atmosphere, because if you have Bills fans chanting for the Bills, it's not a great look for anybody. I've always found the signs thing really interesting, because I understand how upsetting it must be if you have always taken signs to the ground and you hold them up and you're proud, and I get that. But it's not great for the people in the four rows behind you. And for anyone that used to watch wrestling in the 90s and just saw crowds full of them, basically no one saw anything. And I just think it's a tough one. Do you know what I mean? Like, if it was my sign being taken away, I'd be upset. If I was a person sitting in the two rows behind that can't see, I would also be upset. Yeah. So I don't know where I fall on it. I just think it's an interesting...
Yeah, to play devil's advocate to your devil's advocate, Lee.
All devils.
Yeah, who sits there for three and a half hours holding a sign above your head?
No, but when do you hold the sign above your head?
When you know the cameras are on you.
Yeah. Exactly.
When you know the cameras are on you, and also when you think it's important, which is the only time anyone wants to see the field. Like, you know, I don't know. I can kind of see it somewhat as well. You know, for one person who's upset about the sign, I think there's probably three or four people in the rows behind that are just as pleased that it's gone. So,
yeah, the signs thing doesn't bother me whatsoever. I think the signs is just ridiculous, but like that, they could definitely do more to generate a bit of an atmosphere, like the kind of t-shirt guns and the just getting like. And to make your point about Miami, I did see Jason saying earlier actually that it's Miami. Put a DJ on. Get the atmosphere going in between plays and get that going, because it's Miami. So, yeah, I completely agreed with him on that. That for me, feels like if you need to fabricate. And no, I don't want to see a DJ at St. Andrews side. That would be absolutely shocking. But go on, mate.
I wasn't going to say that. I was going to say what they do need is that bouncing dolphin who bounces up and down on his head. Yeah. That'll get the crowd going.
That's exactly what we need. I'm so sure it's just one guy stood. Like with the costume on upside down.
I
think we need to contact Tom Garfinkel and ask if Andy can DJ Sunday at Spurs. That'd be awesome.
All over well, that would just be.
It's not even a Dolphins home game, but hell, why not?
Yeah. Sunday. Anyway, yes, Sunday. On to Sunday. Dolphins are in the UK. It feels like it could be more exciting, but it's still exciting to a certain degree. Jags are terrible. Dolphins are terrible. That means, of course, it's a London game. A lot of people had a really good experience. I saw at the weekend, I saw lots of positive comments and good to be back in the stadium watching it, everything like that. And also some complaints about queues for stuff. But you're always going to get that at these events, aren't you? I mean, like, you're an absolute novice if you've gone to these events and not expected to queue for an £8 pint. Just don't do it, guys. Like, you know. Anyway, Si, excited. How are you feeling? You all hyped to go, get into the mood?
I'm always looking forward to watching the Dolphins in London. It's always a good experience to see your team play locally without having to travel thousands of miles. So I would just want to be there and enjoy the game, enjoy hopefully seeing Tua back. Yes, it would be nice for a good performance, and that would be the icing on the cake, of course, because you always want your team to win. Still plenty going on before then, though, so... A little bit too early to get too excited, because we've got the Hard Rock tailgate party on Saturday, of course, to look forward to prior to that. But yeah, it's always great to see the Dolphins in the UK, and Spurs is a great stadium to watch a game at. I was lucky enough to do the Bears Raiders a few years ago to watch it as a neutral without having to support any particular team. It was a really good game, and the stadium is tremendous as well. So there's not a bad seat in the house, and compared to Wembley, you feel a lot closer to the field. So I know we've got upper tier sideline tickets this year, so I expect the view to be pretty special, and enjoy the experience.
Nice. Yeah, I've seen nothing but great photos on social media, you know, just iPhone things from the back, and it just looks absolutely spectacular. So, yeah, looking forward to it, Lee. You've got media access, Lee. Tell us about that. Tell us how excited you are for that on Sunday.
I have no idea what it means, and I am absolutely stoked. but, yeah, going back to what you were saying, any time we get to see the Dolphins play, I'm excited. Like, game day morning is like the equivalent of Christmas as a child for me. Like, I wake up early, like, just generally excited. It doesn't matter how bad the team is. I get the chance to see my team in person. Like, you know, I'll be honest, I know you guys are different. I only support one other team, like, in any sport ever. And my first love was the Dolphins. I only support them because I supported the Dolphins. It's, you know, it's always a special experience. I've seen the Dolphins get beat an awful lot of times, and I will carry on doing it. Like, the Dolphins look bad right now. I am planning on going to see two games later in the year as soon as I figure out when we can actually fly to America, you know, because I love everything about it. I love the game day experience. I like going. It might not be what it used to be, but, man, I still think, even watching them get beat, if I'm going to watch them anyway. I'm going to watch them here. I'd rather watch them there. So anytime I get to see the team play in person, I really try and appreciate it, because I think it's special to watch a team play.
Yeah, you'll have to report back on your press box experience, Lee, because I know in Hard Rock you're not allowed to cheer at all, or even make a positive sound at all when you're watching the game. Spurs, I believe, is it an outdoor press box like traditional stadiums, or is it indoors? Do you know, Lee? Or
I have no idea. This all happened very late.
Be interesting to know what the atmosphere is like in there, because it's not your traditional UK US journalist, you're going to have all the UK media there as well. And it'll be interesting to know what the response is like during the game, whether you are allowed to express a bit of emotion, Lee, when Tua runs in for his fourth touchdown.
When Tua passes for his fourth touchdown, I'll be the guy running down the stairs, riding his shirt in the air. Like, it's going to be absolutely fine. And I can signal first down and touchdown in complete silence. Don't worry about it.
I think you should, like, just plug yourself up to a microphone that's not going anywhere and just call the plays as if you're live.
As if I'm live. Amazing. Yeah,
totally. Do that.
Yeah, Lee, are you up for a FaceTime call during the game with me and Andy? Because we're sat next to each other. So should we do a FaceTime or something?
Yeah, let's.
Sounds good. In terms of the game itself, bit of a banana skin. Lawrence has been slowly ramping it up week by week. His receivers have slowly been getting more and more injured. Feels very familiar for a rookie quarterback with injured receivers. Where have we heard that before? But Sai, you kind of, how do you see this one going? Easy win, going to be a battle. What do you reckon?
I think, I mean, the Jags seem, as I said earlier, a bit of a dumpster fire at the moment, but that's not anything to do with how they're playing on the field, because they've got some good players like James Robinson, the back, and Trevor Lawrence is starting to get a little bit better. But I think you hit the nail on the head, Andy. He's a rookie quarterback, and we know how Brian Flores likes to scheme against rookie quarterbacks. So in an ideal world, all things being equal, you'd like to think Trevor Lawrence would be kept relatively quiet throughout the game. You might not keep him out the end zone completely, but given the way, as I say, they like to play in scheme against rookies, they should be able to do a decent job on him. And if they can do that, then they're going to be in a good position to win the game, I feel. Because on defense, the Jags, again, are nothing to shout home about. They've just traded away one of their recent top round picks in CJ Henderson. He's gone now. And if the Dolphins have actually started each game really well, I think I was reading earlier, they've scored 34 points in the first quarter of the season, which is second amongst all NFL teams at the end of the early games on Sunday. So if they can continue to do that, force the Jags to play from behind early, then I think they'll be in a good spot to win the game.
Fingers crossed. Lee, any key matchups to talk about?
Yeah, Dolphins against the Jags. I just think it's really that simple. You have to go out there and show that this team isn't as bad as it's played. I say I truly believe that this can be a turning point. And to go back to what we were talking about with Flores earlier, get embarrassed to here and you might get sacked in the middle of the season. This I think this would be the straw that broke the camel's back for Steve Ross. He'd be like, well, it doesn't really matter what I do because this isn't getting better. So let's send it all to hell anyway. Like, but, you know, I believe this team can get the upper hand on the Jags. They're in a worse state than we are. Let's be honest. With the extra, the sort of, let's call it extracurricular stuff. Do you know what I mean? Trevor Lawrence is getting better each week. He's had some rough play. But like you say, the receivers are hurt. I don't know how talented that team really is anyway, even if it was at full health. I mean, them at full health against us at full health, I still don't think should be too much of a problem. I very much believe this is a similar place to where we felt, we probably feel worse now, but it's very similar to when we went into Jacksonville last year and played that Thursday night game. And it was a real turning point, and the defense just got going. Things went their way. Like, Trevor Lawrence has turned the ball over plenty. There's going to be opportunities. We know Brian Flores loves to scheme against a rookie. Like, that's going to give them some confidence. The O-line's played better last week. If we can see some of that and maybe get Fuller and Parker back out on the field, you know, this might be the first week we see the offense as basically healthy. So, I mean, there's a lot of ifs and buts, but that's what happens when you're 1-4. But there's every chance.
You know, like a stat, I'm sure I read somewhere, and somebody please correct me if I'm wrong, but if the Jags lose to the Dolphins on Sunday, do they set some sort of record for consecutive games lost? Was it 20 or 21 games?
It'll be 21. I think it was 20 last week, which equals the record.
Yeah. So, yeah, I thought I saw that written down somewhere. I can't remember where I saw it, so I can't credit the person who put it out there. But it would be so Dolphins, wouldn't it, to lose because of and not let the Jags get that stat.
The Jags do up their game in London, don't they? I mean, obviously, All of us have been to see them in London, and I can't really remember any time I've watched the Jags lose, to be honest. I think they've come away with a win the few times I've been there for them playing. So, yeah, interesting one. I just want to call out one particular matchup, and you've mentioned James Robinson already, but at that kind of Raekwon Davis, James Robinson battle in the middle of that line will be very, very interesting. I think the Dolphins' run defense and pass defense are ranked basically bottom of the league, with the exception of a couple of other teams. So, you know, how will the Jags try and take advantage of that? So, yeah, just all on the Dolphins to come together and solidify across the board, I think. So.
I imagine a crisp Sunday afternoon in London is actually a good place for Raekwon Davis right now, rather than a hot afternoon in Tampa coming off a 3-week injury. Imagine it would just extend the amount that he can play. I would think, unless it's too cold, to be fair, it could be too cold. It's got pretty chilly down this way the last 2 days.
I think
I think that'd be interesting. I think it probably allows him to play a little bit more.
Yeah. Right, lads. Let's wrap it up there. Got a big week, some further content coming from us across the weekend as well. So, we'll leave it there. Si, do you want to finish off with any corporate business, as you'd say, in one of these meetings every hour of the day that I've been in?
I was just going to say, do we want to do a game prediction, score-wise?
Oh, sorry, we do. I always forget either that or game balls, so let's do that. Go on, you can take it away.
I think, bearing in mind, we've got two teams who are pretty much out of sorts and out of form at the moment. I think it will be a relatively low-scoring game, but I think the Dolphins have got enough to win, so I'm going to go 17-10.
17-10. Like that, Lee?
I will also take 10 for the Jaguars. But I am going to go with 35 for the Dolphins, because I have faith that this is a turning point.
17-10 can be a turning point as well, Lee.
That's true.
I'm going to go with a win as well, but I'm going to say that the Jags will put 24 up. And I think we'll put 27 up. It'll be a tight, nice, tight one. That'd be a good one to watch. But
be a good game for the neutrals if it's.
Jason Sanders. Sorry, I was going to say, Andy, Jason Sanders to win it at the end with a 67-yard field goal to get the record.
That would be annoying, because I want to leave slightly early to beat the masses of people on the line. I'm sorry, Tottenham. So please don't do that, Dolphins. Please stroll to a nice, easy win. Right, corporate update. Go on, Si. Hit me with where everyone's going to be on Saturday, what time, who they can bring. Give it to us.
So we have reserved the basement at Hard Rock Cafe from 12 noon onwards on Saturday. So messages have gone out to formal members with regards to those arrangements. But I also understand the Dolphins are going to be there as well. So I don't know what plans they've got for the afternoon. But other than they've got an official tailgate party, if you like, from 12 till 6 on Saturday at the same venue. So if I'm going to be there, of course, Lee, you're going to be there as well. And Andy, I don't think you are you, at this stage? But
not at this point, but it might change.
Yeah, but if you recognise our voices when we're there, then come and say hello. Look forward to chatting and meeting up with you.
Yeah, exactly. And anyone that's going on Sunday, let us know as well. Send us your photos. We'd love to see it all. If there's any American people that are coming over that are listening and you want any advice, then just hit us up as well. So sounds good. Let's hope we get things back on track. Go on, Lee. If you're
coming from Miami, good piece of advice, wrap up warm.
Yeah, exactly. And don't go to a kebab shop in London. That's you're not going to get any good food there. Good stuff. Anyway, right, that's it. And I will end it there.